In his book, A Scream Goes Through the House, Arnold Weinstein says, "The power of literature lies in its ability to overcome solitude and allow pain to find utterance." This work, says one reviewer, is an attempt to help us find the fast-beating heart of our own humanity. In part, the book traces how deathly plagues have been dealt with through the ages and concludes that all great literature helps us understand that we are all carriers and all receivers in a constant flux, and that the diseased figure is not an outsider, he is us. It sounds a lot like religion. Through communities of worship, we seek to overcome solitude. We accept that we each take our turn in the valley of the shadow, and we often experience faith in the power of testimony simply by telling our stories to one another. In many ways, literature and religion do walk hand in hand, and it's no doubt why Bible stories have lasted through the centuries. We're told as we grow older that one of the major tasks of maturity is to accept our own mortality and at the same time to do so and not despair. Naturally enough, we look to religion to help us do this, to keep us hopeful and humble and grateful for life, despite the fact that we know how this great drama ends and that we are always moving in that direction. In her book of essays, High Tide in Tucson, Barbara Kingsolver writes, "Every one of us is called upon probably many times to start a new life. A frightening diagnosis, a marriage, a move, loss of a job, and onward full tilt we go, pitched and wrecked and absurdly resolute, driven in spite of everything to make good on a new shore. To be hopeful, to embrace one possibility after another, that is surely the human instinct, crying out, high tide, time to move out into the glorious debris, time to take this life for what it is." That must be the key, learning to take this life as it is. We can identify with Jonathan Rosen's grandmother because we too want more life. We want to stay engaged with life, and in the process, we want the utterance of our pain to be heard. And we want more than that. We want our lives to have meaning. We want to be healthy and safe. We want joy and love to be ours. And we want to embrace life's goodness and also feel that what we do in this world is making a contribution to that goodness and making at least a small difference. We need all the help we can get. We need each other, and we need places like this community of faith where we create a kind of literature of the soul, in part by telling each other the stories of our lives and where we can hear stories of others, both ancient and modern. We need these testimonies because they give us strength and they assure us that we are not alone in the struggle. Churches throughout the world on Christmas Eve will read the passage from Matthew describing the birth of Jesus, the journey to Bethlehem, the star and the kings and the shepherds in the fields. But most will not read Matthew 2:16, which says that Herod, in a furious rage, killed all of the male children in Bethlehem and in that region who were 2 years old and younger. I'm not going to read it either. But it is a part of that story. The loss of innocent life, in this case, slaughter, sadly, as we know all too well, is not foreign to life. one of my colleagues, a young minister, very openly talks about her story of being diagnosed with a rare and almost always fatal form of cancer at age 16. Her odds of survival were low, in the single digits, and she was very sick for a very long time. Now, looking back, she talks of when she was at her worst in the hospital, so sick she couldn't speak, and her church youth group would come to her hospital room and sing to her. Who knows how she beat those odds, but we have to think that friends gathering around with love and with hope and with tears, doing the one thing they could do, had to have made a difference. When I was in seminary, the young dean of the school was very close to death. And one afternoon, all of the students, all of us, gathered in front of his house also to sing to him as his wife wheeled him to the window, and we sang hymns. So many of those old Protestant hymns are comforting because they speak to the human condition and go to that place where words alone cannot reach. We so often feel so helpless in the face of serious illness or any deep sadness or loss, but there is always connection, always a way to say, I know, I care, I'm here, and you're not alone. Just as our responsive reading says, we need one another when we are troubled and afraid. You may remember this movie that came out several years ago starring Tom Hanks called The Castaway. In this film, Hanks plays a FedEx systems analyst whose plane goes down somewhere over a vast body of water, and he manages to float ashore on some kind of raft where he survives on this desert island for the next 4 years absolutely alone. One of the boxes that also makes it to shore contains a volleyball, and eventually Hanks draws a face, a human face, on this ball, and he names it Wilson, and he talks to the ball, he argues with it, and he draws comfort from having made a pretend friend. The scenes of his talking to this ball as though it were a person are sometimes hilarious, but more often painfully touching. We don't need to be lost at sea or stranded on a desert island to understand, because we know that it is hazardous to try to go it alone in this world. We need to be there for each other to offer hope when hope is hard to find. The subject of finding hope when hope is hard to find takes on a whole different meaning this week, in the face of the tragedy 3 days ago in Newtown, Connecticut, a tragedy almost beyond comprehension. In his statement and through his own tears, the president said to the nation on Friday afternoon, "Today our hearts are breaking," and they were. That's how it felt and still feels. I'm not going to pretend to know or say how a mother or a father finds hope when their child is taken in this way. But what I can tell you are some of the facts of how we responded to the people of Newtown. Almost immediately, Sue Phillips, our district executive, and Andrea Lerner, the district executive of the Metro New York District, were in contact with Barbara Fast, our minister in Danbury, Connecticut, and Jeannie Lloyd, our minister in Woodbury, Connecticut, offering their support and the support of the UUA in whatever way they could, as was the UUA trauma response team. A letter went out to all ministers with resources for parents to help them in talking with their children about trauma, and we forwarded that letter to all of the parents here. The Association for Religious Community mobilized ministers and chaplains and social workers in the area to respond, and an interfaith service was planned at the UCC Church in Danbury that night. It was the same kind of response we see in the aftermath of every disaster, whether a shooting massacre or an earthquake or a hurricane of epic proportions. If hope can be found in the midst of such incomprehensible loss, maybe it comes, at least in part, in expressions of love from the fast-beating hearts of our own humanity. And in this instance, for people like us, people who were not directly impacted by this tragedy, and who have the means and the resources to do so, maybe we can find hope in taking action, as President Obama urged when he said, "It is time for us to come together, putting politics aside, and take meaningful action." And he meant on the issue of gun control. We don't know how Herod slaughtered all of the infants in the region of Bethlehem 2,000 years ago, but we know that through the centuries, sometimes in the name of religion, sometimes for patriotism or out of national fervor, and sometimes as a tragic result of a mind gone mad, human beings have always found ways to slaughter the innocent. That Adam Lanza could have fired 100 rounds of ammunition using an assault weapon designed for ultimate damage into two classrooms or anywhere is, I believe, the tragic consequence of our nation's cowardice on gun control. It's not unreasonable to look to religion to keep us from despairing in the face of not just our flawed humanity, but also in the face of our own mortality. Because while religion does not deny the worst of human nature, it does lay claim to our better selves. It would have us be faithful to hope and to love by asking us, despite all of the evidence to the contrary, to persistently see the goodness of life, the goodness in people, and to be part of creating that goodness. It asks us to look beyond and move beyond our all to human self-centeredness, whatever Herod-like tendencies we harbor, and we do, and take the radically impossible step of loving one another. And what this means is not liking each other a whole lot, or even necessarily getting along. It's much closer to what our UU faith asks of us in terms of respecting each other's inherent worth and dignity. And of course, religion asks us to give thanks for the grace that comes unbidden and undeserved in the form of blessings, the people who love us, and the work that sustains us, the passions that nurture us, literature that overcomes our solitude, and whatever it is that drives us to a new shore, high tide notwithstanding, where we do embrace one possibility after another. The late Reverend Max Coutts, one of our best writers, told the story of the time that two Mormon missionaries came to his door, and he invited them in. And he said they were steadfastly polite and asking him about his religion. He explained that he was a Unitarian Universalist minister, and he said they were fascinated. Fascinated, he said, in the same way I was the first time I saw an armadillo. So he described the tenets of our free faith, and when he was finished, his visitors asked, but what if people on their own individual spiritual journeys come to the wrong beliefs? And Max replied, saying, if one's belief is heartfelt and true for that person, then it probably is not wrong. Maybe that's where we find hope, in some combination of our own beliefs, our shared beliefs, and the connections that we have and make with one another. In the words of Barbara Kingsolver, something enables us to move onward, full tilt, pitched and wrecked, in spite of everything. We ask a lot of religion. In return, religion asks a lot of us, because it is something that we fashion in community through our beliefs, our commitments, our losses, our gratitudes, our struggles, our stories, our hopes and despair. And in the process, we build religious community, places where we help each other move out into the glorious debris, places where we come together trusting there is more life to be had. May the message of this season, the Christmas blessing of peace on earth and goodwill to all, bring hope to our suffering world and to each one of us. So may it be. Amen.